The proprietor came over with another cup of coffee. "What do you boys have?" he said. "Go ahead," said Rollins. He ordered 3 eggs with ham and beans and biscuits, and Rollins ordered the same with a side order of hot cakes and syrup. "You better load up good." "You watch me," said Rollins. They sat with their elbows propped on the table and looked out the window south across the plains to the distant mountains lying folded in their shadows under the morning sun. "That's where we're headed," said Rollins. He nodded. They drank their coffee. The man brought their breakfasts on heavy white crockery platters and came back with the coffee pot. Rollins had peppered his eggs until they were black. He spread butter over the hot cakes.
"There's a man who likes eggs with his pepper," said the proprietor.
He poured their cups and went back to the kitchen. "You pay attention to your old dad now," Rollins said. "I'll show you how to deal with an unruly breakfast."
"Do it," said John Grady.
"Might just order the whole thing again." The store had nothing in the way of feed. They bought a box of dried oatmeal and paid their bill and went out. John Grady cut the paper drum in two with his knife, and they poured the oatmeal into a couple of hubcaps and sat on the picnic table and smoked while the horses ate. The Mexican came over to look at the horses. He was not much older than Rollins.
"Where are you headed?" he said.
"Mexico."
"What for?"
Rollins looked at John Grady.
"You think he can be trusted?"
"Yeah, he looks all right."
"We're running from the law," Rollins said.
The Mexican looked them over.
"We robbed a bank."
He stood looking at the horses.
"You ain't robbed no bank," he said.
"You know that country down there?" said Rollins. The Mexican shook his head and spat.
"I never been to Mexico in my life."
When the animals had eaten, they saddled them again and led them around to the front of the cafe and down the drive and across the highway. They walked them along the bar ditch to the gate and led them through the gate and closed it. Then they mounted up and rode out the dirt ranch road. They rode it for a mile or so until it veered away to the east, and they left it and set out south across the rolling cedar plains. They reached the Devil's River by mid-morning and watered the horses and stretched out in the shade of a stand of black willow and looked at the map. It was an oil company road map that Rollins had picked up at the cafe, and he looked at it and he looked south toward the gap in the low hills. There were roads and rivers and towns on the American side of the map as far south as the Rio Grande, and beyond that all was white.
"It don't show nothing down there, does it?" said Rollins.
"No."
"You reckon it ain't never been mapped?"
"There's maps. That just ain't one of them. I got one in my saddlebag."
Rollins came back with the map and sat on the ground and traced their route with his finger. He looked up.
"What?"
said John Grady. "There ain't shit down there." They left the river and followed the dry valley to the west. The country was rolling and grassy, and the day was cool under the sun.
"You'd think there'd be more cattle in this country," Rollins said.
"You'd think so."
They walked doves and quail up out of the grass along the ridges, now and then a rabbit. Rollins stepped down and slid his little 25-20 carbine out of the bootleg scabbard he carried it in and walked out along the ridge. John Grady heard him shoot. In a little while he came back with a rabbit, and he reholstered the carbine and took out his knife and walked off a ways and squatted and gutted the rabbit. Then he rose and wiped the blade on his trouser leg and folded shut the knife and came over and took his horse and tied the rabbit by its hind legs to his bedroll strap and mounted up again, and they went on. Late afternoon they crossed a road that ran to the south, and in the evening they reached Johnson's Run and camped at a pool in the otherwise dry gravel bed of the watercourse and watered the horses and hobbled them and turned them out to graze. They built a fire and skinned out the rabbit and skewered it on a green limb and set it to broil at the edge of the fire. John Grady opened his blackened canvas camp bag and took out a small enameled tin coffee pot and went to the creek and filled it. They sat and watched the fire, and they watched the thin crescent moon above the black hills to the west. Rollins rolled a cigarette and lit it with a coal and lay back against his saddle.
"I'm going to tell you something."
"Tell it."
"I could get used to this life."
He drew on the cigarette and held it out to one side and tapped the ash with a delicate motion of his forefinger.
It wouldn't take me no time at all. They rode all day, the day following, through rolling hill country. The low caprock mesas dotted with cedar, the yuccas in white bloom along the east-facing slopes. They struck the Pandale Road in the evening and turned south and followed the road into town. 9 buildings, including a store and a filling station. They tied their horses in front of the store and went in. They were dusty, and Rawlins was unshaven, and they smelled of horses and sweat and wood smoke. Some men sitting in chairs at the back of the store looked up when they entered and then went on talking. They stood at the meat case. The woman came from the counter and walked behind the case and took down an apron and pulled a chain that turned on the overhead light bulb. "You do look like some kind of desperado," John Grady said. "Well, you don't look like no choir director," said Rawlins. The woman tied the apron behind her and turned to regard them above the white enameled top of the meat case. "What'll you boys have?" she said. They bought bologna and cheese and a loaf of bread and a jar of mayonnaise. They bought a box of crackers and a dozen tins of Vienna sausage. They bought a dozen packets of Kool-Aid and a slab end of bacon and some tins of beans, and they bought a 5-pound bag of cornmeal and a bottle of hot sauce. The woman wrapped the meat and cheese separate, and she wet a pencil with her tongue and totted up the purchases and then put everything together in a No. 4 grocery bag. "Where are you boys from?" she said. "From up around San Angelo." "You all ride them horses down here?" "Yes, ma'am." "Well, I'll declare," she said. When they woke in the morning, they were in plain view of a small adobe house. A woman had come out of the house and slung a pan of dishwater into the yard. She looked at them and went back in again. They'd hung their saddles over a fence to dry, and while they were getting them, a man came out and stood watching them. They saddled the horses and led them out to the road and mounted up and turned south. "Wonder what they're all doing back home," Rawlins said. John Grady leaned and spat. "Well," he said, "probably they're having the biggest time in the world. Probably struck oil. I'd say they're in town about now picking out their new cars and all." "Shit," said Rawlins. They rode. "You ever get ill at ease?" said Rawlins.
"About what?"
"I don't know. About anything. Just ill at ease."
"Sometimes. If you're someplace you ain't supposed to be, I guess you'd be ill at ease. Should be, anyway."
"Well, suppose you were ill at ease and didn't know why. Would that mean that you might be someplace you wasn't supposed to be and didn't know it?"
"What the hell's wrong with you?"
"I don't know. Nothing. I believe I'll sing."
He did. He sang, "Will you miss me, will you miss me, will you miss me when I'm gone?"
"You know that Del Rio radio station?" he said.
"Yeah, I know it."
"I've heard it told that at night you can take a fence wire in your teeth and pick it up. Don't even need a radio."
"You believe that?"
"I don't know."
"You ever tried it?"
"Yeah, one time."
They rode on.
Rawlins sang. "What the hell is a flowery boundary tree?" he said.
"You got me, cousin." They passed under a high limestone bluff where a creek ran down, and they crossed a broad gravel wash. Upstream were potholes from the recent rains where a pair of herons stood, footed to their long shadows. One rose and flew, one stood. An hour later, they crossed the Pecos River, putting the horses into the ford, the water swift and clear and partly salt running over the limestone bedrock, and the horses studying the water before them and placing their feet with great care on the broad trap rock plates and eyeing the shapes of trailing moss in the rips below the ford where they flared and twisted electric green in the morning light. Rawlins leaned from the saddle and wet his hand in the river and tasted it.
"It's dip water," he said.
They dismounted among the willows on the far side and made sandwiches with the lunch meat and cheese and ate and sat smoking and watching the river pass. "There's been somebody following us," John Grady said.
"Did you see him?"
"Not yet."
"Somebody horseback?"
"Yeah." Rawlins studied the road across the river.
"Why ain't it just somebody riding?"
"'Cause they'd have showed up at the river by now."
"Maybe they turned off."
"Where to?" Rawlins smoked.
"What do you reckon they want?"
"I don't know."
What do you want to do?
Let's just ride. They'll either show or they won't. They came up out of the river breaks, riding slowly side by side along the dusty road and onto a high plateau where they could see out over the country to the south, rolling country covered with grass and wild daisies. To the west, a mile away, ran a wire fence strung from pole to pole like a bad suture across the gray grasslands, and beyond that a small band of antelope, all of whom were watching them. John Grady turned his horse sideways and sat looking back down the road. Rollins waited.
"Is he back there?" he said.
"Yeah, somewheres." They rode till they came to a broad swale or bajada in the plateau. A little off to the right was a stand of close-grown cedar, and Rollins nodded at the cedars and slowed his horse.
"Why don't we lay up yonder and wait on him?"
John Grady looked back down the road.
"All right," he said. "Let's ride on a ways and then double back. He sees our tracks quit the road here, he'll know where we're at."
"All right."
They rode on another half mile and then left the road and cut back toward the cedars and dismounted and tied their horses and sat on the ground.
"You reckon we got time for a smoke?" said Rollins.
"Smoke 'em if you got 'em," said John Grady.
They sat smoking and watching the back road. They waited a long time, but nobody came. Rollins lay back and put his hat over his eyes.
"I ain't sleeping," he said. "I'm just resting."
He hadn't been asleep long before John Grady kicked his boot. He sat up and put on his hat and looked. A rider was coming along the road. Even at that distance, they both remarked on the horse. He came along till he was not more than 100 yards down the road. He had on a broad-brim hat and bib overalls. He slowed the horse and looked down the bajada directly at them. Then he came on again.
"It's some kid," Rollins said.
"That's a hell of a horse," said John Grady.
"Ain't it, though? You think he saw us?"
"No."
"What do you want to do?"
"Give him a minute, and then we'll just ride into the road behind him."
They waited till he was all but out of sight, and then they untied the horses and mounted and rode up out of the trees and into the road. When he heard them, he stopped and looked back. He pushed his hat back on his head and sat the horse in the road and watched them. They rode up one at either side.
"You hunting us?" said Rollins.
He was a kid about 13 years old.
"No," he said, "I ain't hunting you." "How come you following us?" "I ain't following you."
Rollins looked at John Grady. John Grady was watching the kid. He looked off toward the distant mountains and then back at the kid and finally at Rollins. Rollins sat with his hands composed upon the pommel of his saddle.
"You ain't been following us," he said.
"I'm going to Langtree," kid said. "I don't know who you all are."
Rollins looked at John Grady. John Grady was rolling a smoke and studying the kid and his outfit and his horse.
"Where'd you get the horse?" he said.
"It's my horse."
He put the cigarette in his mouth and took a wooden match from his shirt pocket and popped it with his thumbnail and lit the cigarette.
"Is that your hat?" he said.
The boy looked up at the hat brim over his eyes. He looked at Rollins.
"How old are you?" said John Grady.
16.
Rollins spat.
"You're a lying sack of green shit.
You don't know everything."
"I know you ain't no goddamn 16. Where are you coming from?"
"Pandale."
"You seen us in Pandale last night, didn't you?"
"Yeah."
"What'd you do, run off?"
He looked from one of them to the other.
"What if I did?"
Rollins looked at John Grady.
"What do you want to do?"
"I don't know." "We could sell that horse in Mexico."
"Yeah." "I ain't digging no grave like we done that last one."
"Hell," said John Grady. "That was your idea. I was the one said just leave him for the buzzards."
"You want to flip to see who gets to shoot him?"
"Yeah, go ahead."
"Call it,"
said Rollins.
"Heads."
The coin spun in the air. Rollins caught it and slapped it down on top of his wrist and held his wrist where they could see it and lifted his hand away.
"Heads,"
he said. "Let me have your rifle."
"That ain't fair," said Rollins. "You shot the last three."
"Well, go on, then. You can owe me."
"Well, hold his horse. He might not be gun broke."
You all are just funning, said the boy. What makes you so sure? You ain't shot nobody. What makes you think you wouldn't be somebody good to start with? You all are just funning. I knowed you was all along. Sure you did, said Rollins. Who's hunting you? John Grady said. Nobody. They're hunting that horse, though, ain't they? He didn't answer. You really headed for Langtree?
Yeah.
You ain't riding with us, said Rollins. You get us throwed in the jailhouse.
It belongs to me, the boy said.
Son, said Rollins, I don't give a shit who it belongs to, but it damn sure don't belong to you. Let's go, bud. They turned their horses and chucked them up and trotted out along the road south again. They didn't look back. I thought he'd put up more of an argument, said Rollins. John Grady flipped the stub of the cigarette into the road before them. We ain't seen the last of his skinny ass. By noon they'd left the road and were riding southwest through the open grassland. They watered their horses at a steel stock tank under an old F.W. Axtell windmill that creaked slowly in the wind. To the south there were cattle shaded up in a stand of emery oak. They meant to lay clear of Langtree, and they talked about crossing the river at night. The day was warm, and they washed out their shirts and put them on wet and mounted up and rode on. They could see the road behind them for several miles back to the northeast, but they saw no rider. That evening they crossed the Southern Pacific tracks just east of Pumpville, Texas, and made camp a half mile on the far side of the right-of-way. By the time they had the horses brushed and staked and a fire built, it was dark. John Grady stood his saddle upright to the fire and walked out on the prairie and stood listening. He could see the Pumpville water tank against the purple sky. Beside it, the horned moon. He could hear the horses cropping grass 100 yards away. The prairie otherwise lay blue and silent all about. They crossed Highway 90 mid-morning of the following day and rode out onto a pastureland dotted with grazing cattle. Far to the south, the mountains of Mexico drifted in and out of the uncertain light of a moving cloud cover like ghosts of mountains. 2 hours later, they were at the river. They sat on a low bluff and took off their hats and watched it. The water was the color of clay and roily, and they could hear it in the rips downstream. The sandbar below them was thickly grown with willow and carrizo cane, and the bluffs on the far side were stained and cave-pocked and traversed by a constant myriad of swallows. Beyond that, the desert rolled as before. They turned and looked at each other and put on their hats. They rode upriver to where a creek cut in, and they rode down the creek and out onto a gravel bar and sat the horses and studied the water and the country about. Rollins rolled a cigarette and crossed one leg over the pommel of the saddle and sat smoking. "Who is it we're hiding from?" he said.
"Who ain't we?
Well, I don't see where anybody could be hiding over there.
They might say the same thing looking at this side."
Rollins sat smoking. He didn't answer. "We can cross right down yonder off of that shoal," John Grady said.
"Why don't we do it now?"
John Grady leaned and spat into the river.
"I'll do whatever you want," he said. "I thought we agreed to play it safe."
"I'd sure like to get it behind me if we're going to."
"I would too, partner."
He turned and looked at Rollins. Rollins nodded.
"All right," he said.
They rode back up the creek and dismounted and unsaddled the horses on the gravel bar and staked them out in the creekside grass. They sat under the shade of the willows and ate Vienna sausages and crackers and drank Kool-Aid made from creek water.
"You think they got Vienna sausages in Mexico?" Rollins said.
Late in the afternoon, he walked up the creek and stood on the level prairie with his hat in his hand and looked out across the blowing grass to the northeast. A rider was crossing the plain a mile away. He watched him. When he got back to the camp, he woke up Rollins.
"What is it?"
said Rollins.
"There's somebody coming. I think it's that Gunzel."
Rollins adjusted his hat and climbed up the bank and stood looking.
"Can you make him out?"
called John Grady. Rollins nodded. He leaned and spat. If I can't make him out, I can damn sure make out that horse.
Did he see you?
I don't know.
He's headed this way.
He'd probably seen me.
I think we ought to run him off.
He looked back at John Grady again. I got an uneasy feeling about that little son of a bitch.
I do, too.
He ain't as green as he looks, neither.
What's he doing? Said John Grady.
Riding.
Well, come on back down. He might not have seen us.
He stopped, said Rollins.
What's he doing?
Riding again.
They waited for him to arrive, if he would. It wasn't long before the horses raised their heads and stood staring downstream. They heard the rider come down into the creek bed, a rattling of gravel and a faint chink of metal. Rollins got his rifle, and they walked out down the creek to the river. The kid was sitting the big bay horse in the shallow water off the gravel bar and looking across the river. When he turned and saw them, he pushed his hat back with his thumb.
I knowed you all hadn't crossed, he said. There's two deer feeding along the edge of them mesquite yon side.
Rollins squatted on the gravel bar and stood the rifle in front of him and held it and rested his chin on the back of his arm.
What the hell are we going to do with you? He said.
The kid looked at him, and he looked at John Grady.
There won't be nobody hunting me in Mexico.
That all depends on what you done, said Rollins.
I ain't done nothing.
What's your name? Said John Grady.
Jimmy Blevins.
Bullshit, said Rollins. Jimmy Blevins is on the radio.
That's another Jimmy Blevins.
Who's following you?
Nobody.
How do you know?
'Cause there ain't.
Rollins looked at John Grady, and he looked at the kid again.
You got any grub?
He said.
No.
You got any money?
No.
You're just a deadhead.
The kid shrugged. The horse took a step in the water and stopped again. Rollins shook his head and spat and looked out across the river.
Tell me just one thing.
All right.
What the hell would we want you with us for?
He didn't answer. He sat looking at the sandy water running past them and at the thin wicker shadows of the willows running out over the sandbar in the evening light. He looked out to the blue Sierras to the south, and he hitched up the shoulder strap of his overalls and sat with his thumb hooked in the bib and turned and looked at them.
"'Cause I'm an American," he said.
Rollins turned away and shook his head. They crossed the river under a white quarter moon, naked and pale and thin atop their horses. They'd stuffed their boots upside down into their jeans and stuffed their shirts and jackets after, along with their war bags of shaving gear and ammunition, and they belted the jeans shut at the waist and tied the legs loosely about their necks, and dressed only in their hats, they led the horses out onto the gravel spit and loosed the girth straps and mounted and put the horses into the water with their naked heels. Mid-river the horses were swimming, snorting and stretching their necks out of the water, their tails afloat behind. They quartered downstream with the current, the naked riders leaning forward and talking to the horses, Rollins holding the rifle aloft in one hand, lined out behind one another and making for the alien shore like a party of marauders. They rode up out of the river among the willows and rode single file upstream through the shallows onto a long gravel beach, where they took off their hats and turned and looked back at the country they'd left. No one spoke. Then suddenly they put their horses to a gallop up the beach and turned and came back, fanning with their hats and laughing and pulling up and patting the horses on the shoulder.
God damn, said Rollins. You know where we're at?
They sat the smoking horses in the moonlight and looked at one another. Then quietly they dismounted and unslung their clothes from about their necks and dressed and led the horses up out of the willow brakes and gravel benches and out upon the plain, where they mounted and rode south onto the dry scrublands of Coahuila. They camped at the edge of a mesquite plain, and in the morning they cooked bacon and beans and cornbread made from meal and water, and they sat eating and looking out at the country.
"When'd you eat last?" Rollins said. "The other day," said the Blevins boy.
"The other day?"
"Yeah."
Rollins studied him. "Your name ain't Blivet, is it?"
"It's Blevins."
"You know what a Blivet is?"
"What?"
"A Blivet is 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound sack."
Blevins stopped chewing. He was looking out at the country to the west, where cattle had come out of the breaks and were standing on the plain in the morning sun. Then he went on chewing again.
"You ain't said what your all's names was," he said.
"You ain't never asked."
"That ain't how I was raised," said Blevins.
Rollins stared at him bleakly and turned away.
"John Grady Cole," said John Grady. "This here's Lacey Rollins."
The kid nodded. He went on chewing.
"We're from up around San Angelo," said John Grady.
"I ain't never been up there."
They waited for him to say where he was from, but he didn't say.
Rollins swabbed out his plate with a crumbly handful of the cornbread and ate it.
"Suppose," he said, "that we wanted to trade that horse off for one less likely to get a shot."
The kid looked at John Grady and looked back out to where the cattle were standing.
"I ain't trading horses," he said. "You don't care for us to have a lookout for you, though, do you?"
"I can look out for myself."
"Sure you can. I guess you got a gun and all."
He didn't answer for a minute.
Then he said, "I got a gun."
Rollins looked up. Then he went on spooning up the cornbread.
"What kind of gun?" he said.
.32-20 Colt.
"Bullshit," said Rollins. "That's a rifle cartridge."
The kid had finished eating and sat swabbing out his plate with a twist of grass.
"Let's see it," said Rollins.
He set the plate down. He looked at Rollins and then he looked at John Grady. Then he reached into the bib of his overalls and came out with the pistol. He rolled it in his hand with a forward flip and handed it toward Rollins, butt first, upside down. Rollins looked at him and looked at the pistol. He set his plate down in the grass and took the gun and turned it in his hand. It was an old Colt Bisley, with gutta-percha grips worn smooth of their checkering. The metal was a dull gray. He turned it so as to read the script on top of the barrel. It said, .32-20. He looked at the kid and flipped open the gate with his thumb and put the hammer at half-cock and turned the cylinder and ran one of the shells into his palm with the ejector rod and looked at it. Then he put it back and closed the gate and let the hammer back down.
"Where'd you get a gun like this?" he said.
"At the gittin' place."
"You ever shot it?"
"Yeah, I shot it."
"Can you hit anything with it?"
The kid held out his hand for the pistol. Rollins hefted it in his palm and turned it and passed it to him.
"You want to throw something up, I'll hit it," the kid said.
"Bullshit." The kid shrugged and put the pistol back in the bib of his overalls.
"Throw up what?"
said Rollins.
"Anything you want."
"Anything I throw, you can hit."
"Yeah."
"Bullshit." The kid stood up. He wiped the plate back and forth across the leg of his overall and looked at Rollins.
"You throw your pocketbook up in the air and I'll put a hole in it," he said.
Rollins stood. He reached in his hip pocket and took out his billfold. The kid leaned and set the plate in the grass and took out the pistol again. John Grady put his spoon in his plate and set the plate on the ground. The three of them walked out onto the plain in the long morning light like duelists. He stood with his back to the sun and the pistol hanging alongside his leg. Rollins turned and grinned at John Grady. He held the billfold between his thumb and forefinger.
"You ready, Annie Oakley?"
he said.
"Waiting on you."
He pitched it up underhanded. It rose, spinning in the air, very small against the blue. They watched it, waiting for him to shoot. Then he shot. The billfold jerked sideways off across the landscape and opened out and fell, twisting to the ground like a broken bird. The sound of the pistol shot vanished almost instantly in that immense silence. Rollins walked out across the grass and bent and picked up his billfold and put it in his pocket and came back.
We better get going, he said.
Let's see it, said John Grady.
Oh, let's go. We need to get away from this river.
They caught their horses and saddled them, and the kid kicked out the fire, and they mounted up and rode out. They rode side by side, spaced out apart upon the broad gravel plain, curving away along the edge of the brushland upriver. They rode without speaking, and they took in the look of the new country. A hawk in the top of a mesquite dropped down and flew low along the vega, and rose again up into a tree half a mile to the east. When they had passed it, it flew back again.
You had that pistol in your shirt back on the Pecos, didn't you? Said Rawlins.
The kid looked at him from under his immense hat.
Yeah,
he said. They rode. Rawlins leaned and spat.
You'd have shot me with it, I guess.
The kid spat also.
I didn't aim to get shot, he said.
They rode up through low hills covered with nopal and creosote. Mid-morning they struck a trail with horse tracks in it and turned south, and at noon they rode into the town of Reforma. They rode single file down the cart track that served as a street. Half a dozen low houses with walls of mud brick slumping into ruin. A few jacales of brush and mud with brush roofs, and a pole corral where five scrubby horses with big heads stood looking solemnly at the horses passing in the road. They dismounted and tied their horses at a little mud tienda and entered. A girl was sitting in a straight-back chair by a sheet-iron stove in the center of the room reading a comic book by the light from the doorway, and she looked up at them and looked at the comic book and then looked up again. She got up and glanced toward the back of the store where a green curtain hung across a doorway, and she put the book down in the chair and crossed the packed clay floor to the counter and turned and stood. On top of the counter were three clay jars, or ollas. Two of them were empty, but the third was covered with the tin lid from a lard pail, and the lid was notched to accommodate the handle of an enameled tin dipper. Along the wall behind her were three or four board shelves that held canned goods, and cloth, and thread, and candy. Against the far wall was a handmade pine-board meal box. Above it a calendar nailed to the mud wall with a stick. Other than the stove and the chair, that was all there was in the building. Rawlins took off his hat and pressed his forearm against his forehead and put the hat back on. He looked at John Grady.
She got anything to drink?
¿Tiene algo que tomar? Said John Grady.
Sí,
said the girl. She moved to take up her station behind the jars and lifted away the lid. The three riders stood at the counter and looked.
What is that? Said Rawlins.
Cidrón,
said the girl. John Grady looked at her.
¿Habla inglés?
He said. Oh, no, she said.
What is it?
Said Rawlins. Cider. He looked into the jar. Let's have them, he said. Give us three.
¿Mande?
Three, said Rawlins. Tres. He held up three fingers. He got out his billfold. She reached to the shelves behind and got down three tumblers and stood them on the board and took up the dipper and dredged up a thin brown liquid and filled the glasses, and Rawlins laid a dollar bill on the counter. It had a hole in it at each end. They reached for the glasses, and John Grady nodded at the bill. He about dead-centered your pocketbook, didn't he?
Yeah,
said Rawlins. He lifted up his glass and they drank. Rawlins stood thoughtfully.
I don't know what that shit is, he said, but it tastes pretty good to a cowboy. Let us have three more here.
They set their glasses down, and she refilled them.
What do we owe? Said Rawlins.
She looked at John Grady.
¿Cuánto?
Said John Grady.
¿Para todo?
Sí.
$1.50.
How much is that?
Said Rawlins. It's about 3 cents a glass. Rawlins pushed the bill across the counter.
You let your old dad buy, he said.
She made change out of a cigar box under the counter and laid the Mexican coins out on the counter and looked up. Rawlins set his empty glass down and gestured at it and paid for three more glasses and took his change, and they took their glasses and walked outside. They sat in the shade of the pole and brush ramada in front of the place,
and sipped their drinks and looked out at the desolate stillness of the little crossroads at noon, the mud huts, the dusty agave, and the barren gravel hills beyond. A thin blue rivulet of drain water ran down the clay gully in front of the store, and a goat stood in the rutted road looking at the horses.
"There ain't no electricity here," said Rollins.
He sipped his drink. He looked out down the road.
"I doubt there's ever even been a car in here."
"I don't know where it would come from," said John Grady. Rollins nodded. He held the glass to the light and rolled the cider around and looked at it.
"You think this here is some sort of cactus juice or what?"
"I don't know," said John Grady. "It's got a little kick to it, don't it?"
"I think it does."
"Better not let that young'un have no more."
"I've drunk whiskey," said Blevins. "This ain't nothing."
Rollins shook his head.
"Drinking cactus juice in old Mexico," he said. "What do you reckon they're saying at home about now?"
"I reckon they're saying we're gone," said John Grady. Rollins sat with his legs stretched out before him and his boots crossed and his hat over one knee and looked out at the alien land and nodded.
"We are, ain't we?" he said.
They watered the horses and loosed the cinches to let them blow, and then took the road south, such road as it was, riding single file through the dust. In the road were the tracks of cows, javelinas, deer, coyotes. Late afternoon they passed another collection of huts, but they rode on. The road was deeply gullied, and it was washed out in the draws, and in the draws were cattle, dead from an old drought, just the bones of them, cloven about with the hard, dry, blackened hide.
"How does this country suit you?" said John Grady.
Rollins leaned and spat, but he didn't answer. In the evening, they came to a small estancia and sat the horses at the fence. There were several buildings scattered out behind the house and a pole corral with two horses standing in it. Two little girls in white dresses stood in the yard. They looked at the riders and then turned and ran into the house. A man came out.
"Buenas tardes," he said.
He walked out the fence to the gate and motioned them through and showed them where to water their horses.
"Pásale," he said, "pásale."
They ate by oil light at a small painted pine table. The mud walls about them were hung with old calendars and magazine pictures. On one wall was a framed tin retablo of the Virgin. Under it was a board supported by two wedges driven into the wall, and on the board was a small green glass with a blackened candle stub in it. The Americans sat shoulder to shoulder along one side of the table, and the two little girls sat on the other side and watched them in a state of breathlessness. The woman ate with her head down, and the man joked with them and passed the plates. They ate beans and tortillas and a chili of goat meat ladled up out of a clay pot. They drank coffee from enameled tin cups, and the man pushed the bowls toward them and gestured elaborately.
"Deben comer," he said.
He wanted to know about America, 30 miles to the north. He'd seen it once as a boy across the river at Acuña. He had brothers who worked there. He had an uncle who'd lived some years in Uvalde, Texas, but he thought he was dead. Rollins finished his plate and thanked the woman, and John Grady told her what he'd said, and she smiled and nodded demurely. Rollins was showing the two little girls how he could pull his finger off and put it back on again when Blevins crossed his utensils in the plate before him and wiped his mouth on his sleeve and leaned back from the table. There was no back to the bench, and Blevins flailed wildly for a moment and then crashed to the floor behind him, kicking the table underneath and rattling the dishes and almost pulling over the bench with Rollins and John Grady. The two girls stood instantly and clapped their hands and shrieked with delight. Rollins had gripped the table to save himself, and he looked down at the boy lying on the floor.
"I'll be goddamned," he said.
"Excuse me, ma'am." Blevins struggled up, only the man offering to help him.
"Está bien," he said.
"He's all right," said Rollins. "You can't hurt a fool."
The woman had leaned forward to right a cup, to quiet the children. She could not laugh for the impropriety of it, but the brightness in her eyes did not escape even Blevins. He climbed over the bench and sat down again.
"You all ready to go?"
he whispered.
"We ain't done eating," said Rollins.
He looked around uneasily.
"I can't sit here," he said.
He was sitting with his head lowered and was whispering hoarsely.
"Why can't you sit there?" said Rollins. "I don't like to be laughed at."
Rollins looked at the girls. They were sitting again, and their eyes were wide and serious again.
"Hell," he said, "it's just kids." "I don't like to be laughed at," whispered Blevins.
Both the man and the woman were looking at them with concern.
"If you don't like to be laughed at, don't fall on your ass," said Rollins. "You all excuse me," said Blevins.
He climbed out over the bench and picked up his hat and put it on and went out. The man of the house looked worried, and he leaned to John Grady and made a whispered inquiry. The two girls sat looking down at their plates.
"You think he'll ride on?" said Rollins.
John Grady shrugged. "I doubt it." The householders seemed to be waiting for one of them to get up and go out after him, but they did not. They drank their coffee, and after a while the woman rose and cleared away the plates. John Grady found him sitting on the ground like a figure in meditation.
"What are you doing?" he said.
"Nothing."
"Why don't you come back inside?"
"I'm all right."
"They've offered us to spend the night."
"Go ahead."
"What are you in to do?"
"I'm all right."
John Grady stood watching him.
"Well," he said, "suit yourself."
Blevins didn't answer, and he left him sitting there. The room they slept in was at the back of the house, and it smelled of hay or straw. It was small, and there was no window to it, and on the floor were two pallets of straw and sacking with serapes over them. They took the lamp the host handed them and thanked him, and he bowed out the low doorway and bid them good night. He didn't ask about Blevins. John Grady set the lamp on the floor, and they sat in the straw ticks and took off their boots.
"I'm give out," said Rollins.
"I hear you."
"What all did the old man say about work in this part of the country?"
"He says there are some big ranches yon side of the Sierra del Carmen, about 300 kilometers.
"How far is that?"
160, 170 miles.
"You reckon he thinks we're desperadoes?"
"I don't know. Pretty nice about it if he does."
"I'd say so."
"He made that country sound like the Big Rock Candy Mountains. Said there was lakes and running water and grass to the stirrups. I can't picture country like that down here from what I've seen so far, can you?"
"He's probably just trying to get us to move on."
"Could be," said John Grady. He took off his hat and lay back and pulled the serape over him.
"What the hell's he gonna do?" said Rollins. "Sleep out in the yard?"
"I reckon."
"Maybe he'll be gone in the morning."
"Maybe." He closed his eyes.
"Don't let that lamp burn out," he said. "It'll black the whole house." "I'll blow it out here in a minute."
He lay listening. There was no sound anywhere.
"What are you doing?" he said.
"Nothing."
He opened his eyes. He looked over at Rollins. Rollins had his billfold spread out across the blanket.
"What are you doing?"
"I want you to look at my goddamn driver's license."
"You won't need 'em down here."
"There's my pool hall card. Got it, too."
"Go to sleep."
"Look at this shit. He shot Betty Ward right between the eyes."
"What was she doing in there? I didn't know you liked her."
"She gave me that picture. That was her school days picture."
In the morning, they ate a huge breakfast of eggs and beans and tortillas at the same table. No one went out to get Blevins, and no one asked about him. The woman packed them a lunch and a cloth, and they thanked her and shook hands with the man and walked out in the cool morning. Blevins' horse was not in the corral.
"You think we're this lucky?" said Rollins.
John Grady shook his head doubtfully. They saddled the horses, and they offered to pay the man for their feed, but he frowned and waved them away, and they shook hands again, and he wished them a good voyage, and they mounted up and rode out down the rutted track south. A dog followed them out a ways and then stood watching after them. The morning was fresh and cool, and there was wood smoke in the air.
When they topped the first rise in the road, Rollins spat in disgust. "Look yonder," he said. Blevins was sitting the big bay horse sideways in the road. They slowed the horses.
"What the hell do you reckon is wrong with him?" said Rollins.
"He's just a kid."
"Shit,"
said Rollins. When they rode up, Blevins smiled at them. He was chewing tobacco, and he leaned and spat and wiped his mouth with the underside of his wrist.
"What are you grinning at?"
"Morning," said Blevins.
"Where'd you get the tobacco at?"
said Rollins.
"Man give it to me."
"Man give it to you?"
"Yeah, where you all been?"
They rode their horses past him either side, and he fell in behind.
"You all got anything to eat?" he said.
"Got some lunch she put up for us," said Rollins.
"What have you got?"
"Don't know, ain't looked."
"Well, why don't we take a look? Does it look like lunchtime to you?"
"Joe, tell him to let me have something to eat."
"His name ain't Joe," said Rollins. "And even if it was Evelyn, he ain't going to give you no lunch at no 7 o'clock in the morning."
"Shit," said Blevins. They rode till noon and past noon. There was nothing along the road save the country it traversed, and there was nothing in the country at all. The only sound was a steady clop of the horses along the road and the periodic spat of Blevins' tobacco juice behind them. Rollins rode with one leg crossed in front of him, leaning on his knee and smoking pensively as he studied the country.
"I believe I see cottonwoods yonder," he said.
"I believe I do, too," said John Grady. They ate lunch under the trees at the edge of a small cienega. The horses stood in the marshy grass and sucked quietly at the water. She'd tied the food up in a square of muslin, and they spread the cloth on the ground and selected from among the quesadillas and tacos and bizcochos like picnickers, leaning back on their elbows in the shade with their boots crossed before them, chewing idly and observing the horses.
"Back in the old days," said Blevins, "this would be just the place where Comanches would lay for you and bushwhack you."
"I hope they had some cards or checkerboard with them while they was waiting," said Rollins. "It don't look to me like there's been nobody down this road in a year."
"Back in the old days, you had a lot more travelers," said Blevins.
Rollins eyed balefully that cauterized terrain.
"What in the putrefied dog shit would you know about the old days?" he said.
"You all want any more of this?" said John Grady.
"I'm full as a tick."
He tied up the cloth and stood and began to strip out of his clothes, and he walked out naked through the grass past the horses and waded out into the water and sat in it to his waist. He spread his arms and lay backward into the water and disappeared. The horses watched him. He sat up out of the water and pushed his hair back and wiped his eyes. Then he just sat. They camped that night in the floor of a wash just off the road, and built a fire and sat in the sand and stared into the embers.
"Blevins, are you a cowboy?" said Rollins.
"I like it."
"Everybody likes it." "I don't claim to be no top hand. I can ride."
"Yeah?" said Rollins.
"That man yonder can ride,"
said Blevins. He nodded across the fire toward John Grady.
"What makes you say that?"
"He just can, that's all."
"Suppose I was to tell you he just took it up. Suppose I was to tell you he'd never been on a horse a girl couldn't ride.
I'd have to say you was pulling my leg."
"Suppose I was to tell you he's the best I ever saw."
Blevins spat into the fire.
"You doubt that?"
"No, I don't doubt it. Depends on who you seen ride."
"I seen Booger Red ride," said Rollins.
"Yeah?" said Blevins.
"Yeah." "You think he can outride him?"
"I know for a fact he can."
"Maybe he can and maybe he can't."
"You don't know shit from apple butter," said Rollins. "Booger Red's been dead forever." "Don't pay no attention to him," said John Grady. Rollins recrossed his boots and nodded toward John Grady.
"He can't take my part of it without bragging on himself, can he?"
"He's full of shit," said John Grady.
"You hear that?" said Rollins.
Blevins leaned his chin toward the fire and spat.
"I don't see how you can say somebody's just flat out the best."
"You can't," said John Grady. "He's just ignorant, that's all."
There's lots of good riders, said Blevins.
That's right, said Rollins. There's lots of good riders. But there's just one that's the best, and he happens to be sitting right yonder.
Leave him alone, said John Grady.
I ain't bothering him, said Rollins. Am I bothering you?
No.
Tell Joe yonder I ain't bothering you.
I said you wasn't.
Leave him alone, said John Grady.
Days to come, they rode through the mountains, and they crossed at a barren wind gap and sat the horses among the rocks and looked out over the country to the south, where the last shadows were running over the land before the wind, and the sun to the west lay blood-red among the shelving clouds, and the distant cordilleras ranged down the terminals of the sky to fade from pale to pale of blue and then to nothing at all.
Where do you reckon that paradise is at? Said Rollins.
John Grady had taken off his hat to let the wind cool his head. You can't tell what's in a country like that till you're down there in it, he said.
There's damn sure a bunch of it, ain't there?
John Grady nodded. That's what I'm here for.
I hear you, cousin.
They rode down through the cooling blue shadowland of the north slope. Evergreen ash growing in the rocky draws, persimmon, mountain gum. A hawk set forth below them and circled in the deepening haze and dropped. And they kicked their feet out of the stirrups and put the horses forward with care down the shaly rock switchbacks. At just dark, they benched out on a gravel shelf and made their camp. And that night they heard what they'd none heard before, three long howls to the southwest, and all afterwards a silence.
You hear that? Said Rollins.
Yeah.
It's a wolf, ain't it?
Yeah. He lay on his back in his blankets and looked out where the quarter moon lay cocked over the heel of the mountains. In that false blue dawn, the Pleiades seemed to be rising up into the darkness above the world and dragging all the stars away. The great diamond of Orion and Capella and the signature of Cassiopeia, all rising up through the phosphorus dark like a sea net. He lay a long time listening to the others breathing in their sleep, while he contemplated the wildness about him, the wildness within. It was cold in the night and in the dawn before daylight. When they woke, Blevins was already up and had a fire going on the ground and was huddled over it in his thin clothes. John Grady crawled out and got his boots and jacket on and walked out to study the new country as it shaped itself out of the darkness below them. They drank the last of the coffee and ate cold tortillas with a thin stripe of bottled hot sauce down the middle.
How far down the road do you think this'll get us? Said Rollins.
I ain't worried, said John Grady.
Your partner yonder looks a little misgive.
He ain't got a lot of bacon to spare.
You ain't neither.
They watched the sun rise below them. The horses standing out on the bench grazing raised their heads and watched it. Rollins drank the last of his coffee and shook out his cup and reached in his shirt pocket for his tobacco.
You think there'll be a day when the sun won't rise?
Yeah, said John Grady, Judgment Day.
When do you think that'll be?
Whenever he decides to hold it.
Judgment Day, said Rollins. You believe in all that?
I don't know.
Yeah, I reckon.
You? Rollins put the cigarette in the corner of his mouth and lit it and flipped away the match.
I don't know. Maybe.
I knowed you as an infidel, said Blevins.
You don't know a goddamn thing, said Rollins. Just be quiet and don't make no bigger ass of yourself than what you already are.
John Grady got up and walked over and picked up his saddle by the horn and threw his blanket over his shoulder and turned and looked at them.
Let's go, he said.
They were down out of the mountains by mid-morning and riding on a great plain grown with side oats, grama, and basket grass, and dotted with lechuguilla. Here they encountered the first riders they'd seen, and they halted and watched while they approached on the plain a mile away, three men on horses leading a train of pack animals carrying empty kayaks.
"Who do you reckon they are?" said Rollins. "We ought not to be stopped like this," said Blevins. "If we can see them, they can see us. What the hell is that supposed to mean? Said Rollins. What would you think if you seen them stop?
He's right, said John Grady. Let's keep riding.
They were Zacateros, headed into the mountains to gather chino grass. If they were surprised to see Americans horseback in that country, they gave no sign. They asked them if they'd seen a brother to one of them, who was in the mountains with his wife and two grown girls, but they'd seen no one. The Mexicans sat their horses and took in their outfits with slow movements of their dark eyes. They themselves were a rough lot, dressed half in rags, their hats marbled with grease and sweat, their boots mended with raw cowhide. They rode old square-skirted saddles with the wood worn through the leather, and they rolled cigarettes in strips of corn husks and lit them with escarajos of flint and steel and bits of fluff in an empty cartridge case. One of them carried an old worn Colt stuck in his belt with the gate flipped open to keep it from sliding through, and they smelled of smoke and tallow and sweat, and they looked as wild and strange as the country they were in.
"Son de Tejas?" they said.
"Sí," said John Grady. They nodded. John Grady smoked and watched them. For all their shabbiness, they were well mounted, and he watched those black eyes to see could he tell what they thought, but he could tell nothing. They spoke of the country and of the weather in the country, and they said that it was yet cold in the mountains. No one offered to dismount. They looked out over the terrain as if it were a problem to them, something they'd not quite decided about. The little mules entrained behind them had dropped asleep, standing, almost as soon as they'd halted. The leader finished his cigarette and let fall the stub of it onto the track.
"Bueno," he said. "Vámonos,"
and nodded at the Americans.
"Buena suerte," he said.
He put the long rowels of his spurs to the horse, and they moved on. The mules passed on behind them, eyeing the horses in the road and switching their tails, although there seemed to be no flies in that country at all. In the afternoon, they watered the horses at a clear stream running out of the southwest. They walked the creek and drank and filled and stoppered their canteens. There were antelope out on the plain, perhaps 2 miles distant, all standing with their heads up. They rode on. There was good grass in the level floor of the valley, and cattle the color of house cats to tortoiseshell and calico moved off constantly before them, up through the buckthorn, or stood along the low rise of ancient ground running down to the east to watch them as they passed along the road. That night they camped in the low hills, and they cooked a jackrabbit that Blevins had shot with his pistol. He field-dressed it with his pocket knife and buried it in the sandy ground with the skin on and built the fire over it. He said it was the way the Indians did.
"You ever eat a jackrabbit?" said Rollins.
He shook his head.
"Not yet," he said. "You better rustle some more wood if you aim to eat this'n. It'll cook." "What's the strangest thing you ever ate?"
"Strangest thing I ever ate," said Blevins. "I guess I'd have to say that would be an oyster."
"A mountain oyster or a real oyster?"
"A real oyster."
"How were they cooked?"
"They wasn't cooked. They just laid there in their shells. You put hot sauce on them."
"You ate that?"
"I did."
"How'd it taste?"
"About like you'd expect." They sat watching the fire.
"Where are you from, Blevins?"
said Rollins. Blevins looked at Rollins and looked back into the fire.
"Uvalde County," he said, "up on the Sabinal River." "What'd you run off for?"
"Would you?"
"I'm 17 years old. I can go wherever I want."
"So can I." John Grady was sitting with his legs crossed in front of him, leaning against his saddle and smoking a cigarette.
"You've run off before, ain't you?" he said.
"Yeah."
"What'd they do, catch you?"
"Yeah. I was setting pins in a bowling alley in Ardmore, Oklahoma, and I got dog-bit by a bulldog, took a chunk out of my leg the size of a Sunday roast, and it got infected, and the man I worked for carried me down to the doctor, and they thought I had rabies or something, and all hell busted loose, and I got shipped back to Uvalde County."
"What were you doing in Ardmore, Oklahoma?"
"Setting pins in a bowling alley."
"Well, how come you wound up there?"
"There was a show supposed to come through Uvalde, town of Uvalde, and I'd saved up to go see it, but they never showed up because the man that run the show got thrown in jail in Tyler, Texas, for having a dirty show. Had this striptease that was part of the deal.
I got down there and it said on the poster they was going to be in Ardmore, Oklahoma in 2 weeks, and that's how come